Why do we do the prayers? Because our minds need to be transformed in order to listen correctly, understand what's being said, and develop a wish to put what's being said into practice in our daily lives. So at the beginning of any teaching, we should always have this intention, that is thinking, tonight or today or now I'm going to listen to this teaching, which is on Buddha's instructions. We're talking to ourselves, we're saying, thinking like this to ourselves. I'm going to listen very carefully to these teachings, these instructions. I'm going to try to understand their meaning. And then I'm going to take that meaning deep into my heart, and I'm going to put it into practice in my daily life in order to benefit myself and all other living beings. This is a supreme motivation, you know, to benefit ourselves and all living beings. We naturally want to benefit ourselves, but we also need to have a much broader mind that is interested in benefiting others as well, which of course benefits ourselves. So I'm giving some commentary to Venerable Geshe-la's great gift to the world, this free e-book, Modern Buddhism, The Path of Compassion and Wisdom. And last week, many of you were here, and we started the instructions suitable for persons of middling spiritual capacity, which basically means a person who has generated the special motivation that we meditated on at the end of last week's class. Can you remember what it was? Of course not. 7 days ago. My goodness. We can't even remember 7 minutes ago, can we, nowadays? So I'll remind you. I'm sure you all know. Last week we started the teachings on the Four Noble Truths, you know, Buddha's famous original utterances when he was first asked to teach. His first words were, "You should know sufferings. You should know sufferings." The first noble truth. It's called a noble truth because it's held to be the truth by noble ones. Noble ones are those who have realized directly, non-conceptually, the actual nature of things, the real nature of things. We haven't. We haven't realized that. We are not noble ones. So we don't know the truth, but they know the truth. They know the truth. And the truth is suffering. Okay? So if you remember, we're not talking about the suffering of suffering, when we're having a headache or a stomachache or a serious illness. We're not talking about that suffering only. We're also talking about the suffering of change. We sometimes call that pleasure, but it's actually a suffering. And we're talking about the suffering of pervasion or pervasive suffering. But in particular, last week I focused on the suffering of suffering, or we say manifest suffering, of all the various realms of samsara, the various places that we can take rebirth as animals or hungry spirits and so forth. And the point of the teaching last week was for us to understand that unless we find a way of stopping our own suffering, then when we die, after we die, we take rebirth once again in another form of life. Maybe we're a human, luckily. If we're a human, okay. Maybe we're an animal, maybe we're something else. But in all of those lives, they're contaminated by the poison, the inner poisons of delusions. And so those lifetimes naturally give rise to suffering. And the suffering that we're experiencing now, you know, is nothing compared to the suffering we're going to experience in the future. So the point of the contemplation was to help us to generate an intense fear of the sufferings of this life and our countless future lives. So one way I like to think about this is just in terms of quantity. You know, how much suffering can you manage? Right now, we're sitting here tonight. But we're not sort of in intense pain. You wouldn't be here, you'd be in bed or something, or in the hospital. But we all know, our wisdom is telling us, our experience, that in the future of this life, just this life alone, this one life, there is going to be, for all of us, I'm sorry to say, unbearable suffering once again. It's coming again, physical suffering, mental suffering. It is coming. Sicknesses, aging, dying, you know, and then rebirth. These are unbearable sufferings. When we're experiencing them at that time, we feel to ourselves, it's unbearable, I can't bear it. The only thing we're concentrated on is the wish to be free from that suffering. So we contemplate this again and again and again in this life and in the next life and in the next life and in the next life until we get this sense of interminability. It's never going to end. It's never going to end. And from that arises a special wisdom that is thinking, I must liberate myself from these future sufferings. I must free myself. I must liberate myself. I want out. I don't want any more suffering. It's quite a natural thought. We have it for present suffering. If I stick a big sharp needle into you now, you'll be wanting to be free from that suffering. It's just an extension taking us into the future and saying, well, it's just going to carry on unless you do something. So last week's meditation object was the determination to permanently liberate ourselves from the suffering of countless future lives. Okay? Which seems very distant to us, and of course we never think about it. But the meditation tries to make us think about it and think about the future. We're not animals. We can think about tomorrow, next week, next year, next lifetime, you know. So it's trying to enhance our wisdom and get us to think about these important things. Yeah. So that was the first noble truth, anyway, in a nutshell. I mean, there's countless teachings on it. In this book, Joyful Path of Good Fortune, there's dozens and dozens and dozens of pages explaining about these sufferings. The reason we need to contemplate suffering, and people sometimes think Buddhism is a depressive religion because, you know, we're always talking about suffering. The reason we need to contemplate suffering is because it is the truth. Everybody suffers. And unless it's kind of almost pushed in our face, we kind of forget about it. As soon as it's over, like once your headache's over, once your stomach ache is over, yeah, I'm okay now. And we carry on as if we're never going to suffer again. We just, you know, even if we have great tragedy in our life, you know, after a while the pain subsides, the suffering subsides, the intensity subsides, and then we carry on, oh, things are going to be okay now. We're so stupid because it's not going to be okay. You know, next time there's something else coming, something else, something else. So, we have to look at that directly, truthfully, and then say to ourselves, no, I don't want this. I want to be free from it. So that mind, which we generate, that is called renunciation. It's a special mind called renunciation, meaning we're giving up suffering. We're not renouncing our family. We're not giving up our friends or our job or our responsibilities. We're not giving up anything apart from suffering. Renunciation, if it's correct renunciation, is a wisdom mind. It's the nature of wishing faith. It is great wisdom. It is a happy mind. We are like a person who has been suffering for a long time from a serious, painful illness that nobody can find the answer to. And then we find a doctor, a consultant, who says to us, I know what's wrong with you. I'm going to fix it. Don't worry. You're going to carry on suffering for a bit, but I'm going to fix it. Don't worry. So when we get renunciation, we feel the same. We think, okay, I'm still in pain. There's still a lot of suffering ahead of me, but I found a doctor who's going to cure me. You know, I found the medicine that's going to cure me. So I'm happy. Even though I may be in pain, I'm happy. So this week we're going to look at where does this suffering come from? Sorry for laughing, but it's incredible, isn't it? It seems, although I'm going to say something now, it sounds like Buddhist supremacy or something, but, you know, Buddhism is the only philosophy, religion, way of life, whatever you want to label, you want to stick on it, Buddha's teachings are the only explanation as to where suffering comes from and how to stop it permanently. I've looked everywhere. I can't find another explanation anywhere else. It's, for others, it's a mystery, or it's somebody's will. It's some creator's will that we suffer for some bizarre reason, you know. But in Buddhism, we get very clear presentation of why we suffer and how to avoid it, how to stop it completely. So what we're going to do this week is identify the source of our problem, the source of our suffering, and generate a strong intention to, first of all, identify it within our own mental continuum, reduce its power, and finally abandon it. This is just, it's just a determination we're going to generate this week, just a wish. You know, I want to identify the source of my suffering, I want to reduce its power, and eventually I want to get rid of it altogether. Which to me, it seems like a natural wish, if you want to be free from suffering. It's the same approach that doctors take, isn't it? They look for the source of the illness, they look for the cause, and then they say, okay, we're going to get rid of this cause, and we're going to cure you. So the Buddha's the same, he's the supreme doctor, excuse me. So, in modern Buddhism, this comes under the heading, what we should abandon. You know, when you abandon things, you leave them behind, don't you? Kind of, I've abandoned that, I've given it up. So in Sutra of the Four Noble Truths, which is Buddha's first teaching, Buddha says, you should abandon origins. Origins. Or origins. How do you say origins? Origins. The more I say that, I begin to think of oranges, you know. You should abandon oranges. No. Origins, he says. You should abandon origins. So in saying this, Buddha is advising us. He's just giving us advice. There's a guideline. If we wish to liberate ourselves permanently from the sufferings of our countless future lives, then we should abandon origins. In this context, origins means our delusions, principally our delusion of self-grasping. Delusions are parts of our mind. They are distorted ways of seeing reality. For example, when we're irritated with somebody, we were irritated with that person is appearing to us in a way that they do not actually exist. They're appearing to us as an inherently existent irritation, which they're not. We just happen to have a sensitivity to what they're doing. When we're angry with somebody, we are creating that person as an inherently evil or bad or difficult person, when in fact they're not. It's just our ability to be patient and loving is zero. That's the problem. So it's not the problem of the other person. So delusions always distort reality. I like to think they're like, those, maybe they don't have them any longer, but when I was a kid, you used to be able to go to amusement arcades or fun fairs, and you go into this place called the Hall of Mirrors. You know the Hall of Mirrors? So you walk in, and there are these very distorted mirrors. You go in, and your head is about 300 feet high, and your body's a little shrunken thing. And you know, everything's distorted, isn't it? This is what the delusions do to us all the time. Jealousy, pride, you know, attachment, uncontrolled desire, ignorance, anger, all of these are delusions. There's many, many, many of them. We've got principal ones, root ones, and we've got secondary ones, many of them. These are delusions, but the principal one is this one called self-grasping. Self-grasping, this is the root, this is the main one from which everything develops. All the bad stuff comes from self-grasping. So don't be put, don't be sort of misled by the name self-grasping. It's a bit, little bit technical. So we need to build up our own correct understanding of what self-grasping is, because it is the enemy. I think Geshe-la says next. Self-grasping is called an origin because it is the source of all of our suffering and problems, and is also known as the inner demon. Just like a phrase, you know, it's the inner demon. It's inner. It's a demon. You know, it's inner demons in here. Delusions are wrong awarenesses. In other words, they're mistaken minds. An awareness is just a mind. It's wrong. It's mistaken. Delusions are all mistaken awarenesses, and whose only function is to destroy our mental peace, the source of our happiness. So you know when you're angry, you're not happy. You're not peaceful. You know when you're jealous, you're not peaceful. You know, when you're, which is like most of the time, and we're so familiar with not being peaceful that we just think it's normal. And it is. It is normal for most people to be unpeaceful and to be disturbed. But all of that disturbance is coming from these delusions, which perturb, they disturb our mind. And of course, in our ignorance, whenever our mind is disturbed seriously, you know, we can cope with like humdrum day-to-day disturbance. It's just the way things are, you know, to be mentally disturbed the whole time. Yeah, everybody's like that. But when somebody really disturbs us, we say, "You have really disturbed me." Temper. Don't we? We point the finger and we blame that person. Completely wrong. Completely and utterly wrong. You know? Yes, maybe temper did, and temper would never do this, but maybe he would insult me, or, you know, trip me up or something like that. Play a game on me, play a trick on me. I don't know what he would do, but, you know, people say things, do things that we don't find pleasant, we don't like. Or they actually do insult us, or they do hit us, or whatever they do. But our problem isn't the fact that they've done that or said that. Our problem is our reaction. It's our response. And of course, we say, "Oh, but it's natural to respond in that way." And I agree, it is natural. But what is natural isn't always good for us. I'm sorry to say, for you eco-warriors out there. But, you know, if it's natural, it doesn't necessarily mean it's a good thing. It's natural to get angry. Yes, I agree, it's natural to get angry. But what we need is for it to be natural, to be patient, to be loving, to be kind, to be peaceful. We need that. We all need to be peaceful. So the delusions, I mean, in Spanish, any Spanish speakers here? Portuguese speakers. Anyway, in Spanish, the word for delusion is engaño. Engaño means deceiver. It literally translates in Spanish as deceiver, the word delusion, delusion. Anger is a deceiver. It's tricking you into thinking that they're the problem, you know, when in fact the problem's in here. All of our problems are in our mind, all of them. It doesn't mean to say we're to blame for it, like you should be beating yourself up for having so many delusions. It doesn't mean that. It means that the source of our difficulties is within us, which gives us great power if we believe it, if we fall in line with the truth and actually understand that. It gives us incredible power over our life.